dressed and showered. And so and all of a sudden I hear this commotion. All the ball players run inside the clubhouse. Mr. Sawyer comes in, everybody's in the clubhouse. I said, what's happening? Some guy's knocking on the door, and I open the door up, and there's this guy's got blood all over his face. Blood coming out of his nose, spitting blood all over the place. What happened? And they had it. As you're walking, coming in the clubhouse, you're walking between the stands. And this guy must have lost some money, or he got mad, or he lost the ball from him, and he got some beer, and he threw it in Mr. Sawyer's face. So Mr. Sawyer belted him, and that was it. I said, hey, pal, you better get out of here before Mr. Sawyer finishes the job. And he would, and he would. And you wouldn't think, looking at Mr. Sawyer, that he could do it, but he could. He was a fabulous man.
What was the most money you ever made in 1 year playing baseball?
$25,000.
And what would it have been, 57?
56.
56, 57? Yeah.
55, 56. That was the point. When I signed that contract, which I didn't even know anything about, until the next day. I signed a contract for $25,000. Oh, big grade, man. I didn't care what I got. I just wanted to play. Okay. You do something that you love and you get paid for it. I mean, what you mean? You meet great people, ball players, fans. Hey, what else you want? What else you want in life? Anyway, I go up and Roy Hamey, I think, the general manager, he said, okay, we agree. He says, all right, let's take a picture for the paper. Okay, fine. Put your feet on a desk. I used to smoke cigars, and I'm smoking a big cigar and everything else. Oh, great, this is great. But the next day, the paper comes out. My wife shows it to me. Look at those shoes you have. On the bottom of the sole of my shoe is a big horn. And I didn't even know it. I said, oh, Craig, that's great. But we got to kick the charge out of it, so I needed to raise to buy a pair of shoes. But it was great.
What kind of meal money did they pay back in the 50s? When you're on the road?
I think it was $6. We got $6. Six or $8 a day.
Yeah. And that was supposed to cover just food or?
Food, that's all it was.
That's all it was?
If you drank or stuff like that, well, you'd have to take it out of your $8, or not, we take extra money, but you take it. $8 supposed to cover everything that you spend on the road. They'd pay for the hotel room, and they'd take care of getting your bags in your room and then taking it back to the airport or train. You'd bring it down to the lobby, and then they'd have people take it to the train. But no, they give, I think it was $6 or $8. I think about $6 sticks in my mind. But anyway, that was after when I first got up in the major leagues, they didn't have any minimum wage. They gave you so much a month. Mm-hmm. And after a while, I think the first minimum wage I think we ever got was $6,000. And it kept going up, but $6,000 was the first minimum.
Did you do any work in off season?
You got to be kidding. I laugh some of these guys over here. They say, oh, they go down and take a vacation and stuff like that. I come from Michigan, Detroit, Michigan. After leaving Delray, we moved to a section called Allen Park. It was a suburb of Michigan, Allen Park, Michigan. We got there. Well, I with the money from the World Series that put the down payment on. We moved in there. Each winter, I used to come back. I used to have to go look for a job. I didn't have a job. I had to go look for a job. A couple of years, I worked in a factory where they used to make the insides of the doors for cars, insulation and all this stuff. I worked in there for about 2-3 years. I worked for a company that used to make the hubcaps. Cut your fingers, they're so sharp. Get them off the assembly line, pick them off, certain types. They have an order for such and such a car, you pick them up and you didn't have, even you worked sometime with the gloves, they're so sharp that you'd cut your fingers. A couple of years I worked in a steel mill. That's an experience. And then, I mean, I just, like I say, I looked for a job and I worked all winter.
Were you superstitious at all when you were playing ball?
Yeah, a little bit. A little bit. I can't think of any one thing right now to what I did, but I think everybody's superstitious. That's like somebody says, you never hear the guys booing, the fans booing. I think that's a lot of malarkey, too. How can there's 65, 70,000 people in the stands that are booing, and you may say you can't hear it? You got to be deaf. Or you got earplugs in your ear, one or the other. You got to hear them. It's the idea of what happens after you hear them, whether it gets to you or not.
Was there anybody that you played with that was you would consider extremely superstitious? Or anybody that you played against? Anybody that sticks out?
Oh, there's not offhand. All the ball players do something. All the ball players do something. Like Eddie Matthews, I mean, he had not so much superstition, but the bellhops used to hate to see Eddie Matthews come into town in a hotel. See, what I understand, they tell me that he used to carry weights in his bags. He used to lift weights on the road. And the bellhops wouldn't want to carry his bags because they're too heavy. So every time you see Eddie Matthews' bag, they forget it. Eddie used to carry it up to his room himself.
When you were through playing, was the adjustment from playing baseball to going back to, let's just say, a more civilian life, was that an easy adjustment for you?
It wasn't too bad because I'm one of those guys, it's like when I got out of service, that's it. That was finished. And when I started to play baseball, when I finished, it was a little tough around spring training for about 1 or 2 years, but after that, I just made up my mind that I was going to do something else, and that's it. I stayed with it.
When you were in, I should ask this a little bit earlier, when you were in Philly, you wore number 29. And
right.
Was there any special, did you ask for that number? I know now ball players ask for numbers.
I was just glad to have a uniform.
So there's no special attachment to that, no?
No, they gave it to me when I first broke in, and I wore it ever since.
Now, tell me what you've done since your playing days were over up until now.
Well, after I retired from baseball, I started selling tabulating cards in Philadelphia, and then for a couple, 2-3 years, and I got into concrete business through a friend of mine, Chuck Bednarik, a great football player. He worked for this concrete company, and he asked me that we're real good friends, and he says, hey, you interested in joining a concrete company? I says, yeah, let's listen to them. So he gave me their proposition, so I joined them, the concrete company in Philadelphia. And the plant I worked out of, there was a steel mill there, which another contractor, he used to do a lot of work in there, and he had a concrete company also. So I met Mr. Morrissey and his son, and then from there they were looking for a salesman, so they only had one guy there. So then after that, so I listened to their proposition, and I says, all right. They says, all right, you're hired. So I was a salesman for an outfit by the name of JDM Materials, and the other contracting division was James D. Morrissey, and they had a lot of blacktop plants, sand quarries, stone quarries, concrete plants, you name it. They were big contractors, state and highway contractors. So I joined them, and the first thing you know, the gentleman was running the place. He passes away. So the first thing you know, they made me vice president of sales. I go on and work for them, vice president of sales. And I was with them until I had my quadruple bypass. In 85. And then I tried to go back to work, but I was with them for about 19 years. And like I say, from salesman, I went all the way to vice president of sales and was with them for 19 years, and after I couldn't do it, so we came out here, and we moved out here to Mesa, Arizona, which we love, and because it's good for our health, my health, my wife's health, so we move out here and we really enjoy it.
It certainly is nice here.
And so in 88, I was inducted in the Pennsylvania Sports Hall of Fame, and I enjoy life. I took up wood carving, I played a little golf when I played baseball, but I do it more often now. I play golf, and I get my walking in daily, and I get my exercise in daily. and play golf and do my wood carving. So what else do you want?
Did you have any desire when you were through playing to get into any coaching or managing or scouting or anything like that?
No. No, but the reason I didn't like getting into that, due to the fact that you only have, there's only so many coaches and so many managers and scouts and stuff like that around, and there ain't that many ball clubs anymore, so I figured, although there are more ball clubs than when I was playing, but I don't think there's that many kids playing anymore. I don't know why, but I know they have a bit of opportunities. You, in fact, you have your little leagues and your all these different American Legion and stuff like that. They got the opportunities, but the kids, I think they got too much television, too much cars, stuff like that. Yeah. But I don't. You can't beat that life in baseball. You're doing something that you really love. And you get paid, and you get a great pension plan. With the money they're making now, they're stupid, they're foolish. But like I say, it's we're happy out here, and I get the fresh air out here, and that's why I feel pretty good, and I'm in pretty good shape. I mean, not to play ball, but I'm still in pretty good shape. But we really love it out here.
Do you have two more? Do you have a favorite memory from baseball? Is there just one thing that you look back on more fondly than anything else?
Well, I think just playing in the big leagues is great, and the friends I made through baseball, playing against these guys and playing with them, and the ballplayers' wives that we had on the Phillies. We knew more of the wives on the Phillies than we did with Milwaukee, because we lived in Philadelphia, and the wives lived in Philadelphia with the ball players, and the Robertses, the Simmons, Bobby Shantz, although he played in the other league, but we got to know him. We used to see him in the wintertime. We used to play basketball in the wintertime with Bobby Shantz and Robbie and Kurt and Paul Harrison, Just playing in the big leagues and meeting these fine people and meeting the fans and all over meeting fans, making new acquaintances. That stands out. It's great. It's great.
Last question. Is there any disappointments? Is there anything if you could go back and change anything, is there anything that you'd change?
Not offhand. I think, I don't know whether I'd play any longer than I did. I probably had some possibilities, but I never given a second thought to play any longer. Like I say, Roy Hamey gave me the opportunity. He said, hey, why don't you go down to Richmond? And I could have played. I could have played down there because I just didn't see. It was 61, and that was when they had the Mets came in, 61. And if I went down to, or 62, if I would have went down there, perhaps maybe I had a half a decent year. Perhaps maybe the Mets, I would have joined the Mets. And still made it in the big leagues. But I was sick and tired of traveling.
Sick and tired. In 61 and 62.
That's right. So I was sick and tired of traveling. I started traveling in 1943 when I got out of high school. And I quit in 60. Traveling.
17 years on the road was enough.
That's right. If you're going overseas and during the war and then traveling and playing baseball, it was too much for me. I just had it. I wanted to stay home and get acquainted with the kids and enjoy a little life. But no, I wouldn't change one bit of it. One bit of it.
Okay, Stan, thanks for taking the time to talk to me today.
Rick, it was a pleasure. I enjoyed it.
Okay.